Mr. Chadwick, Real 2. We were talking about your time with Salamanca squad when you were training at Brantsbeth, the depot, with the DLI. The squad you were in, how did you get on with them? I mean, did you have a good relationship with the rest of the lads?
Wonderful relationships. And I think 90% had. Because, again, those days, without being old-fashioned, everybody was in it for the same purpose, to win the war. I think that was a great factor. Very few were intending staying in, but while they were there, the looking in spirit seemed to encompass the country. Whatever you did, you were all doing it together. And I think the SPD call then was far better than joining up in peacetime, when it would become, for want of a word, a bit more of a rat race. You were all there to go and fight for England. I know it sounds corny, but that was what it was about.
Now, you became a regular, but at this stage, were you HO, hostilities only?
Well, you couldn't be a regular then, you see.
Now, so, within, you said 90%. What about the other 10%?
Well, some hated it. I can relate a story to you of a gentleman called Fred Ivel. And we'd only been in about a week. And we had bunk beds then with a polyas on. And this particular night, lights out, was 10 o'clock. And you were ready for it. You'd been up the gym. You'd been running all day, drilling, running, digging, etc. And I heard him crying. And he said, I can't stand this. Oh, I said, give it a go. You haven't been here 5 minutes, sorry. 6 o'clock, the valley, the corporal used to sleep in the same room, came to me, where's Ivo? And I honestly didn't know. And I've never seen him since. He got up in the middle of the night. Now, he couldn't take it.
He actually deserted.
Oh, yeah, he was off on the trot. Not on the trot. He would obviously catch up with him sometime, but I never heard of him again.
Would, did any of the rest of your squad go?
No, he was the only one as I knew.
But you were aware.
A small percentage really hated it. Only a small percentage.
Was there any bullying? I mean, you said you got on well, but were any people picked on by anybody?
People always say to me, you've got the wrong conception of this. Now, don't get me wrong. I wasn't right, Tyson. But I was keen on boxing. And they said, you never saw it because they all said, oh, he boxes. I can understand. I never saw anybody in my recruit training. But when I say I haven't seen it, you get some verbal bullying, longest I every walk of life. But I never saw anybody physically beaten by a counterpart at all. Never.
Now, you were in this barrack room, so would the whole squad in one room with your corporal?
Yes.
And what were they in Nissen Hut up at Brantsbeth?
No, they weren't Nissen Hut. They were. It was opened in 1938 as one of the first militia camps, and they were wooden huts. The old Nissen Hut then wasn't being there at the time. Cold in winter, of course, but you had a coal fire. And of course, when you got up every morning, even down to polishing the nails on the floor had to be done.
Every day?
Every morning. You used to get your razor blade on your broom handles. You used to be burnishing the fire buckets. You used to be putting the metal polish on the nail heads on the floor. Then the chap with the bumper came round, and this was all done before breakfast.
What? Why the razor blade? Can you just explain?
Well, to clean the shaft, because you've been using it all day with dirty hands. It had to be spotless when he came in. End of the week, you had a matchstick for you had a matchstick for a brush steel or a brush handle. It had been worn down that much with the razor blades. And then days, of course, you clean your own buttons.
How did you do that then?
Well, you had a button stick.
Could you explain? Because a lot of people don't know what a button stick is. Could you just explain?
Well, I've got one now. It's a piece of metal, we would say, 2 inches wide by 10 inches long with a slot up the middle about a quarter of an inch. You place that on all the buttons of your greatcoat and pull them together. And then you get your brush so that the polish and the dirt doesn't go onto the greatcoat. So that helps you to clean your buttons back and front without defacing the uniform in any shape or form.
Were there any old sweats to give you the tips on like how to get your boots as clean as possible?
Not really. The old sweats have been in a year. The only old sweats you had there were all the instructors, predominantly were regular soldiers. I've got to say, if you want the truth, later, after I was right, I didn't think they were very efficient. The peacetime soldier, everything was done parrot fashion. When he used to remove his helmet to wipe his brow, he'd forgotten what he was teaching him, but he'd have a look at his pamphlet and be in his cap. But he'd take his feet cap off, and he was reading the pamphlet. So to me, he didn't know it as he should. And in later years, I served with a lot of these men when they came back to the battalion. And as Brigadier Hamler would say, not my standard.
Now, would that apply to your Eldridge?
No. He wasn't there to give tips. He was there to knock little bodies into fighting men in 6 weeks. And he was the perfect man for the job. He didn't go around on technicalities. He inspected your boots, your corporal, your sergeant, and all that.
Now, one way of looking at your training is perhaps to take a typical day. It probably never existed, this typical day, but if we just look at that way, what time would your day start then? You'd wake up at...
Up at six.
And what...
Furnishing till half six. Wash and shave. Breakfast seven.
Now, food, the breakfast. What did you think of army food, particularly?
Wholesome, plenty, nourishing and sustaining. Cocoa, I'm not saying they were delicacies, but for growing young men, ideal food. Ideal. And always enough. Certainly at Denver.
So, and what type of thing would you get for breakfast, roughly?
Kippers, fried potatoes, which was a favourite staple diet. Fried Spam. And obviously the proverbial egg and bacon, I'm not saying a lot, but plenty of bread, about an inch thick. Midday meal, likewise in substance, potatoes, meat, or a good stew, or whatever. Tea, a nice meal. Supper was always a bread and dripping butty, about this thick.
Inch and a half.
Yeah, and a cup of cocoa. And the mugs were, they were like a beer mug, them big white mugs. They got one of them full.
So almost a pint's worth of cocoa or something.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I said there was a good pint in there.
So that for you, it bore good, it was as good as you'd been getting at home, if not more so.
More so at times. More than one could afford it to.
So quantity-wise, you were...
Quantity-wise and quality-wise. Because majority of kids my age didn't know delicacies. Unless your dad was in 10 days a bus driver. Because that was not as a good job. Or your dad was a bobby. Or something of that nature.
So, breakfast, what then?
PT.
Now, what sort of PT were you doing?
Go for a run from Bramsford to Wellington and back. I think it's about a mile each way. And if you're naughty, something I never agreed with the army, never happened up to this day. I always objected to collective punishment. And one day, we were running along, and some of the herds at the back were acting the fool. And And Johnny Taylor, the old cruiserweight boxer, he was taking us, Corporal Taylor then. And he turned round and wanted to know who had been laughing and giggling. So he went, well, they all struck him on. So he said, right, you can all run back to Bransford with your arms in the air. Which is good. Well, I objected to that. I had to do it. I went and saw him. I said, I don't mind that, Sally. And I never believed in collective punishment. If an offence was committed in a barrack room and they couldn't find out, they confined the barrack room, the object of the exercise being the other 30, three or four, would make the one or two own up. But it didn't work that way. And this punishment did go on for quite a while. But other than that, I found everything quite fair. Just a thing that even in later life, you know, as an hour ascend, people say, well, if I don't find out, I'll keep the whole company in. I said, I don't want the company keeping in. I want the culprit found. Don't punish all these good chaps just because we've got one limit.
That's you. I'll be coming back to that idea. Now, anything, the PT, you running, anything else?
Oh, you've got the gym there, up the wall bars, climbing ropes, scaling ropes, nothing.
Would now you were fit, I would presume, if you're a swimmer for the level you were. But what about, did some of the lads, perhaps who weren't so fit, did they have trouble with that?
Oh, terrible trouble. So I hate using the word weakly, but some who weren't physically fit, as well as the tunnels, who couldn't go up the road, well, they'd get badgered by the PT instructors. You know, to them it was embarrassing. It didn't help them, I found. You know, I was always trying to learn how to handle people and how to do these things.
Even at that stage?
Even at that stage, I think it was always there. And I used to go to these lads and I used to say, look, just come up this rope behind me, little things, to gain the confidence. And they say, oh yeah. And it all helped, did this, to get, but they were never really badgered to the place that you know, they couldn't sleep at night or anything like that. But some used to dread going to the gym. Because I always found, if there's anything you're good at, anything you like, you're reasonably good at.
Now, so PT, now that wouldn't include, I'm going to come back to the boxing and sports side of your arm. That wasn't part of that, but this morning PT would just be the either a run or a session in the
you
gym.
What
would you do after that, perhaps, after PT?
Training.
What about drill? Would you do?
Oh, a very important part. 30% of all training, I'd say, at least, was drill. For the obvious reason.
Now, there are two questions. What was the obvious reason? And secondly, when did you realise that was? Because some people don't understand until the end of the day is what drill's for.
Well, I like to put drill down akin to this. We've got two men who were signalmen on the railway. And they both have little boys about 3 or 4 year old. And signalman A this day looked out the window and saw his little boy playing on the railway lines and the Scottish Express coming down at 90 miles an hour. So he opened the window and he shouted, "I know!" And he did. Now signalman B's little boy was playing on the same railway track, etc. He shouted, "Lie down," and he didn't. That's the essence and the reason for drill. Instant reaction to a word of command. If somebody says, lie down, well, it's done on the square. And that's why it was so important.
Now, when you were learning drill, I mean, you joined the Durham Light Infantry. You weren't in a battalion yet, this is just a depot. But were they learning light infantry drill and pace, or were they learning heavy infantry?
I mean, we were doing light infantry.
So even in the depot, you were learning.
God, that stood out of my. court-martial offence to say that, but we didn't. At Bransford at that time, there was two regiments training, the Duke of Wellington's, the Dirty Dukes, and the Durham's. And the Dirty Dukes were heavy infantry. The Durham's were light, so you can imagine the little profiles we had between them and the place.
So you learned the light infantry pace and the trail and the rest of it.
All light infantry trail, from the attees to the attees. Not from the attention to the attention. All from the attees to the attention. And a chap my height initially found it a bit hard with a short step. Because you don't take a front 30 inch light infantry. People say they do. They don't.
What do they take? What would you say it was?
Well, a lot depends on the drummer. Because, for a start off, you can't march to music. Nobody can march to music. You march to a drum. Now, if you set the metronome at 160, it's going like that, like hell. Now, the drum light infantry pace is 140. They never march at 140. They always step it up, which I don't agree with. But it covers a multitude of sins. You can't see a mistake so much if it's being done quickly. Now, for the pace, if the drummer beats it up to 160, he's told to do it by the bandmaster. A 6 foot man as I was then, struggling with my brother, I couldn't get a full 30 inch pacing. A 5 foot two, three or four man could, with ease. So your pace is set like a convoy. Of the slowest ship, or the smallest ship, his little legs, or else we're not going to be dressed when we march fast. And we should be very informed. Over the years, I can do as good as anybody.
So, what would the pace be? 28 inches or?
Well, they call that the ATS pace, 28 inch. 28 inch. I know it's only a couple of inch, but it makes that difference. Because if you're going as fast as they do, if you notice a green jacket or the regiment that they used to sound retreat, we don't think it we sounded. You see the little legs going like the Gurkhas. It's the only way they can do it, the speed they're marching at. And that drum dictates the pace.
So when you went on the parade ground for the first drill, they started you at that on light infantry drill right from the start. So you didn't learn the other way and then speed up.
Straight away, we were different than the Dirty Dukes. They were heavy, we were light. They were heavy infantry, we were light infantry. And that stuck right through.
Did you enjoy drill?
Always did. Loved it.
Right from the start?
Yeah. Because I can do it. I was physically equipped. I was tall. I like to say, think I was smart. It all fitted in.
Did you find you had some people who just couldn't do drill?
Oh, of course. We've got men whose both arms went up together. Not coordinated at all. Hopeless cases.
What was done with them?
They were backloaded. They back squat them to see if they'd get anything out. So they'd do 3 weeks. And Crushy then, which said they Crushy Eldridge, I said, look, get him out of my side. Get him moved. Back squad.
What the back squad would mean they'd go.
It got to a squad just starting again. Now, he was getting a chance to show them that he could do it because he'd gone through it mostly once. So the second time round, he most likely get a grasp of it better. Failing that, they would send him ERE.
Which is?
Extra regimentally employed. A dishwasher at the course at factory in Borden. Send him on a job somewhere. Pioneer Corps. Any mundane job.
Would that, I mean, out of 35, how many would it have that? Or would it, perhaps none, you know?
I would say in our squad, I think we'd won in our squad. I always put these down to nerves. because he was a smashing lad when he was away from the square. He's bright to death, of course. Bright to death as a sound, quivery. I saw him on an interview in front of the company commander, not for the misdemeanour, and he was winged over his leg. He was frightened. So I don't think he'd had any authority in his life. I think he must have been brought up maybe with the one parent moment them days, and loved, showered with love too much, and never saw the outside world. In our case, that was different. I'd have 50 to the other.
Would anyone tease him? I mean, would he be the sort of bloke that would get teased a lot?
Well, get teased. You know, but not to the extent I think they do today. It'd be more, get a grip of yourself, son. That's it. I don't know what's up with you. You're a man's boy. Words to that effect.
So, that's drill. What about now? So let's have a look at weapons, Joe. But if we could start with, I mean, did this start with a rifle, Lee Enfield? Was that the first thing that?
My first rifle was Lee Enfield.
Can you tell us how they went about training you in both firing and looking after it and the whole thing about the rifle?
Well, I've got to tell you this story now. The other sergeant there, who I could like, a real old time.
Do you remember his name?
Thank you, old Miguel. But I was lying on the firing point, and I was never a good shot. I'm not saying I was a duckhead, but I wasn't as good as a... And I think I tried too hard. So this day on the firing point, I was getting out a flag, and a flag means a miss. And we're talking with a big target, really. However, it kicked my feet and used a lighter attention that day. And he said, Chadwick, you're a very, very lucky man. Sergeant, do you know why you're a lucky man? No, Sergeant. Well, when you leave here, you're going to go to war to fight for England. Unfortunately for you, you will not get killed. Do you know why? I said, no, sir. He says, because all the Germans have died laughing at you. Now, that was a fact. Now, later on, I was a first class shot, but never a crack shot. First class is all you need. But I was never a natural, you know, they used to shout fix bayonets and charge until you do something, for God's sake.
What did you need to be a good shot, would you say? What were the things that made someone a good shot? Because we hear various things, various qualities.
But there's only one quality to be a good shot. Natural ability. All this business of restraining your breathing. Can I be explicit with you on this? I have very strong convictions on it. Okay, if you're going to be an infantry man, you've got to know how to fire a rifle. Now, in what bit of action I have seen, I have never been able to restrain my breathing when I've been firing at an enemy. I have never been able to look at grass to blend my eye with the target. All I've intended to do was send gunfire that way as fast as possible. A, to let him know I've seen him, and B, I'm firing at him. Even when you see them, you're breathing heavy because you're excited. So all this training is all right for Bisley, but not in action. When you get close quarters to a man who's firing back at you, you have no time for technicalities. Just let him rip. Unless you're on top of him, really, and that's a different kettle of fish. But I think people most likely shoot you down if you think this. I think there was far too much emphasis on hitting the bull. Because when you got up there, they used to, in your training to fire the rifle, the last practice, you started at 700 and ran down to 100. And then you fired from the shoulder as you were in action. And when you got down there, you're breathing that heavy. with all the equipment on, your rifle was going up and down. So, by all means, if you've got a natural shot, grooming. They talk about sniping, a lot of them were made of that, in my opinion. But as long as he knows how to fire it, that's the important thing, and get the best direction he can. But this business of tapping the foresight one, you can't do that in action. Tap the foresight back a bit, because they go for grouping, as you know, in rifle shooting. But if your group's far left, you can move the foresight over. But you've no armour in action. Your rifles get bashed about, thrown off trucks, thrown against rocks, and your aim's put off. So just concentrate on getting them off quick.
And into a general area.
That direction. Let him know that you've seen him and pour ammo at him. Some of it. If you don't hit him, they'll stop him firing back.
Did they practice rapid, because they used to practice rapid fire, 15 rounds a minute?
Oh, yes.
Did you practice that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Four fingers and thumb on the bolt and middle finger on the trigger to squeeze the trigger. That's not applicated. If you're firing an application, you squeeze with the right finger. But for speed, finger and thumb on the bolt, so it's back, back. You've got to use of three fingers instead of two. That was taught, and I think quite sensible for house to house roll, like we had in Greece. They run up and down houses and stairs, met in both the back gardens. Well, it was handy to get them off quick. But invariably, you reverted to the thing you knew best, squeezing with the index finger and pull back the big finger and thumb, you know, to cock the weapon. But again, work of a man practice all his misery shooting there, restraining the breathing before you fire. You know, it's not obvious.
So they taught you that what something about did they teach you? Mentioned that they taught you to fire when you were lying down, to attention. That there was a very strict, certainly pre-war, way you were supposed to lie, with your feet in a certain position, and they say the sergeants used to kick you.
Kick your feet out.
That's what I mean, yeah. Was that still going on?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. Oh, I think that is essential. I think the operative word there is, if you're an instructor, is tell the soldier initially to make yourself as comfortable as possible. Because if you're not comfortable, you can't fire properly. Now, if his feet then are in the light triangle, as we used to call it, you just kick his foot out a bit. Now, so that's spot on, Bonnie lad. Keep it there. It's a good thing, because, but invariably, a human being, if he gets down to use a weapon, he will make himself comfortable. As long as you're being in a cramped position, it just instinctively, this is no good to me. Elbows, whatever.
But why would they have want them to have the feet out? I've never quite understood that. Was there any point to having the feet out?
It was probably comfortable, and the firer then made what you would call a 20 to 5 thing on the clock. His body to the abdomen's there, and then his legs spread out that way. And I think you'll find it's the most comfortable. If you were stretched full length, you'd get done. But if you stretch, if you come down like that, with the two legs there, if you will, you're pretty, pretty comfortable.
So, what they were doing, it may have seemed that they were being over rigid, but what they were trying to do is get the men in the position that would be most, they knew it would be the most comfortable, even if the man on the floor didn't.
Sustain fire from that position for as long as he needed, without having to move. And expose himself. It's like soldiers instinctively, on exercise, in action. If you're running behind a wall that's 9 foot high, you run crouched. But it takes more out of you running crouched. Why are you running crouched? It's instinctive. Self-preservation. Try and drill it into them. If you've got protection, a 6 footer mower, although you don't hike, run normally, straight up. It saves you wind, it saves you energy, and you're more composed when you need it. But instinctively, you will, if somebody's firing up,